All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, we're talking about the evolution of the Falcons passing game, focusing on whether or not they will become a more explosive passing attack in the future and why that could be critical for their long-term success under head coach Arthur Smith.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, I'm Aaron Freeman here of Locked On Falcons. You know me, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, writing weekly columns over at the Falcoholic, the SB Nation website for the Atlanta Falcons. And of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's Locked On Falcons podcast is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been there, and it's more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's also the unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. So, guys, I want to thank you first and foremost for making Locked On Falcons your first listen of the day. And, of course, Locked On Falcons is free and available on a multitude of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, and Spotify. And now, of course, many of you watching me, many of you listening to me can check me out on YouTube. Of course, go and subscribe to Locked On Falcons. Like us, give us that thumbs up, leave a comment, tell your friends about the Locked On Falcons podcast so we can grow this audience on the YouTube, just as we have done over the years with the various podcast platforms in the audio format. So today's episode of Locked On Falcons is going to feature a conversation that I've been chomping at the bit to have these last couple of days. But fortunately, the Falcons have gotten some good news with some certain players like Calvin Ridley returning, Russell Gage returning that we've discussed on previous episodes. Some bad news with Kalen McGarry potentially being out, although, again, I know there's a lot of Falcon fans that think that's good news that they won't have to see Kalen McGarry play this weekend. But, you know, I wanted to get to this because this is something that has been sort of at the back of my mind, and talking about the offense and talking about explosiveness. And this is sort of a key issue that I constantly come back to because this is like a core issue that I've been talking about, whether it's on Locked On Falcons, whether it's on the previous incarnation of this podcast with the Falc Fans podcast, and when it was writing stuff at FalcFans.com, you know, 7-8 years ago, this has been an issue, and that's linked to the explosiveness. And this sort of goes back to a conversation I had over the summer where a listener sent in a question on a previous Q&A talking and asking me about what I thought the Falcons' potential ceiling was and whether or not they could make a deep postseason run. And, you know, it's funny saying that because, you know, since then people have been insistent that they didn't have high expectations for this team. But I'm like, you know, just go back a couple of months and people were certainly a lot more optimistic about the team than they seem to want to indicate right now in order to save face, as it were. But on that previous episode, I looked at data from sites like Football Outsiders to look at teams over the last 5 years that have made it to the conference championship to see why they were successful, and primarily focusing on the importance of offense and why that is leading to more team success, given that the old adage is, you know, defense wins championships. But it's kind of been true over in the NFL the last several years, particularly over the last 5 years, that, you know, offense wins championships. And, you know, now the benefit of being on YouTube is that we have graphics. So definitely go check us out on YouTube if you want to see what I'm posting on the screen right now. And don't mind the sort of crudeness of it with making it with an Excel sheet and whatnot. But what I learned when you looked at the final four teams in each of the last 5 years, so you had 20 teams, 19 of those 20 teams, or 95% of those teams, featured a top 10 offense according to Football Outsiders DVOA metric. Only 6 out of those 20 teams, or 30%, featured a top 10 defense. And I also learned that None of those 20 Final Four teams had an offense that finished below 16th in that respective year, but eight of them had defense that finished below 16th, meaning that making it to the conference championship game, at least over the last 5 years, was nearly impossible if you had an average to below average offense, but was relatively common given roughly nearly half the teams were able to do that with an average to below average defense. Now, I also looked at the teams from the previous 5 year period, and you can see a new graphic on the screen there showing the period of time from 2011 to 2015 to sort of compare and contrast where this trend, if this trend is a continuation from previous years, and it's not as strong, but you know, 70% of teams from 2011 to 2015 that made it to the conference championship game, they had top 10 offenses, and 45% had top 10 defenses. So the last 5 years, we've seen, you know, that uptick in terms of more top 10 offenses and less top 10 defenses in the most recent 5 year period. And then you go back to the sort of the Final Four teams and whether or not those teams had below average offenses, again, 0% since 2016, but 15% going back from 2011 to 2015, had, you know, below average offenses. And 25% had below average defenses over that previous 5 year period. So again, it's telling us that this is trending in a certain direction where offense is becoming more important, at least over the last 5 years, when it comes to looking at these Final Four teams than it was over the previous 5 years, where you had a little bit more of a mix of teams that were a little bit more closer to mediocre when it came to their offensive performance. But I don't necessarily see this as a situation where the pendulum is going to swing backwards, right? Where you're going to see, given the all the rule changes that we've seen over the years that certainly favor the offense, to me, it's not going to swing backwards in the favor where you're going to start seeing more mediocre offenses make these deep postseason runs anytime soon in the foreseeable future. Now, I say that, and before anybody puts too many words in my mouth, this is not me saying that defense doesn't matter. You know, I think there's evidence to say clearly that being good at both offense and defense is matter. And I have another graphic sort of illustrating that point. And, you know, looking at this 10-year period of research, looking at these Football Outsiders DVOA rankings, 10 of the teams both finish in the top 10 on offense and in the top 10 on defense, according to Football Outsiders. And 7 out of those 10 teams wound up making it to the Super Bowl. You know, the 3 exceptions included 2 teams that wound up losing to other teams that had top 10 units on both sides of the ball. That was the 2015 Cardinals losing to the 2015 Panthers, the 2017 Vikings losing to the 2017 Eagles. And the one outlier was, of course, our favorite choke artist, none other than the 2018 Saints, who had a top 4 offense, according to Football Outsiders, a top 8 defense, and wound up losing to the Rams in the NFC Championship game. And we, of course, give a lot of love for our boy, Nickell Roby Coleman, for that one. But, you know, one of the things that regular listeners know about me, and I've been preaching on, you know, this podcast and on various writings over the years, is I'm a big proponent of explosive plays. And again, I have a 4th graphic. This is the last one for those of you tired looking at the screen. But, you know, to me, the importance of explosive plays is also reflected in data. When you look at 2011 to 2015, 14 teams had top 10 offenses. 9 out of those 14 teams, or roughly 64%, had offenses that finished in the top 10 when it came to generating 20 plus yard plays. In the most recent 5 year period since 2016, that number included 79% of the top 10 offenses also were top 10 when it came to explosive plays. And so, you know, we'll get rid of those graphics for those of you watching on YouTube, and I will sort of link to this in the description below to the Google Doc that shows all this data. So if you want to peruse this at your leisure, of course, you can do so. But basically, all of this to say, in summary, it's not to sit here and say that offense is all important, defense doesn't matter. It's not to sit here and say that in order to have a good offense, you have to be explosive. It's never as simple. It's never as automatic as we often like to believe when it comes to this sport called football. But when we're talking about, you know, 19 teams finishing in the top 10, making it into the Final Four, 19 teams that had top 10 offenses making it into the Final Four over the last 5 years, you know, that still means that there's 31 other teams that had top 10 offenses over the last 5 years that didn't make it past the second round of the playoffs. So again, it's not sort of this automatic thing. But, you know, there's clear-cut trends here that are clearly slanting towards the offense. There are tendencies that say that the best offenses tend to be offenses that can generate explosive plays at a relatively high rate compared to the rest of the league. And, you know, this is why you hear me and see me spend a lot of time and energy discussing this Falcons offense. Like, you can go back to yesterday or the other day's episode where on Monday, where I did my bi-week roster review, and I spent basically two or three times as much time breaking down each position group on the offense that I did talking about each position group on the defense. And it's not meant to ignore the defense, but it's due to my belief that is, you know, backed up by a significant amount of data that if and when the Falcons offense is performing at a high level, you know, this team is going to start to be successful again. And so when you look at this year's Falcons team, you know, in terms of their DVOA rankings, you know, as of last week, they were 28th and 30th. I haven't looked them up. They just dropped on Tuesday. Probably should have looked them up before jumping on the air here to see if the Falcons moved up. But, you know, to me, when I look at those rankings, I'm not as concerned about the 30th ranked defense. I'm much more concerned about the 28th ranked offense, given that the Falcons hired an offensive-minded head coach in Arthur Smith, and the expectation is that he's going to produce high-level offenses similar to what we saw him do in Tennessee, where both of his offenses in Tennessee in those 2 years where he was calling plays there were in the top six when it came to their DVOA ranking. So I think it puts pressure on Arthur Smith to get that offense up and running sooner versus later. And I think the good thing is that the Falcons offense is trending in the right direction, you know, every week this year. So things are moving in the right direction, but, you know, I want to continue this discussion on today's episode where we're going to talk a little bit more about where this team is in terms of their explosiveness and whether or not that's going to lead to a little bit more of that trend upwards as we move forward. But before we get into that, I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen of the day. And a recommendation I have for your second listen of the day is the Locked On Hawks podcast, one of the daily podcasts on the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network. You guys can get ready for the Hawks or your favorite NBA team's opening night action by subscribing to Locked On Hawks or your favorite podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So I know many of you guys are listening to this stuck in bumper to bumper traffic, whether you're in Atlanta or wherever you call home, and you wind up burning through a ton of gas. Why not get some cash back so that you can save at the pump? You know, you now can with a new app called Get Upside. When you open an account with Get Upside, you get 25 cents back per gallon every time you fill up. Over time, that kind of savings starts to add up with people making as much as $200 to $300 a month in cash back with Get Upside. You not only save, but there is multiple cash out options. You can have a direct payment into your bank account. You can get your money through PayPal. You can even have your money converted into gift cards so that you can spend them at Amazon or wherever you want. And now you, when you open an account with our special promo code Touchdown, you get a bonus 25 cents back per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents back per gallon. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Download the free Get Upside app available at the App Store or on Google Play and use that promo code Touchdown when you sign up. That's Get Upside promo code Touchdown to start saving every time you fill up. So as I noted earlier, the Falcons offense is trending in the right direction in terms of their DVOA rankings. You know, I think the Falcons offensive performance in the first two games really tanked their rankings in a lot of ways. A lot of that was due to how poorly they played against the Eagles by all accounts. And then the two pick sixes in the fourth quarter against Tampa Bay really sort of tanked their DVOA rankings there. So I think the Falcons offense is better than their DVO rankings indicate, but you know, they still have a long way to go before we're talking about this unit being a top 10 unit. They were better in week three, but again, still overall, I think performed at a level, at least based off of their DVOA grades for that game, like a below average offense. And so the last couple of weeks, they've been looking more like a team that typically is in the upper half of the league. So again, they're trending in the right direction, but overall, we're just not getting the consistency. So hopefully we'll see that. You know, you look at their DVOA ranking for the Jets game, just individually, it was the ninth best in the league that particular week in week five. So We know that's the Jets. And we know that DVOA does wind up adjusting for the quality of opponent. So that plays a part in it. But I think it's a good sign that the Falcons offense is improving. And I think it comes just at the nick of time, because over the next 2.5 months, they're going to be facing some really high caliber defenses. And so the quality of competition is going to be raised considerably than where it was when we faced teams like the Jets and Giants and Washington in terms of defenses that weren't great. Now, this week against Miami, we don't have necessarily a top notch defense. Again, these are based off of last week's DVO rankings. I haven't looked them up for this week as of yet, but last week Miami ranked 24th in defensive DVOA. But then the following week we have Carolina, who was second, New Orleans, who was third, Dallas, who was sixth, New England, who was ninth. And so that's a pretty tough slate. Four top 10 defenses, according to DVOA, at least last week, over the next 5 weeks. And then you have a little bit of a reprieve going into that week 12 game against Jacksonville, whose DVOA defensive ranking was 31st in the league a week ago. So, that's why when last week, I think it was on the Q&A, someone asked me to sort of predict what I thought the Falcons' final record was. And, you know, I was looking at teams like Miami and Jacksonville and Detroit as probably your most winnable games, because those are three pretty bad defenses. And then you're kind of hoping that you can kind of pull off two more wins in your division against potentially Carolina and New Orleans. And so you're kind of looking at five more wins. It's not to sit here and say that the Falcons can't win more games, but to me, they're going to have to be playing at a consistently, considerably higher level come November and December than we've seen so far this year in order for them to beat some of these better defenses that we're going to be facing later this year. And I think they're potentially on that path, but I just think we need to see more. And I think one of the ways that we can get more from this team is if they can be a lot more explosive. And one of the things I already discussed earlier this week was talking about the offense attempting more deep passes when we were breaking down the bye week roster review, breaking down Matt Ryan attempting more deep passes the last couple of weeks with the Falcons offense getting off the ground. And again, I don't think that's a coincidence. The Falcons offense is seemingly improving, but you know, the focus really was on the Falcons increasing their intermediate throws, those throws that travel 10 to 19 yards in the air, more so than sort of really pushing the ball down the field to a high degree, at least compared to any other teams. It's a high degree compared to what the Falcons were the first three games of the season, but to your normal NFL offense, not a high degree of verticality in the Falcons offense. And, you know, when you look at the number of explosive plays that the Falcons have generated, you know, they've had 14 20 plus yard plays this year, which is the third lowest total in the NFL. And I know some of that is due to the fact that the Falcons have played one less game than a lot of other teams. But the only teams that are below them in those rankings are the Bears and the Saints. And when you look at those teams, you know, the Saints' lack of explosiveness is not because they aren't trying to be explosive. Jameis Winston is taking plenty of shots down the field. He's actually like 12th, I think, in terms of the percentage of throws over 20 plus yards in the air. They just simply lack the weapons, in large part due to their offense being, you know, all about slant king Michael Thomas, him being injured. And then even though we know that since he's a slant king, as they say, his presence is going to really move the needle in terms of their downfield throws. But by and large, the players like Ted Ginn and Tre'Quan Smith that they've generally relied on to be those downfield vertical playmakers these last couple of years, you know, Ginn is gone, he's retired, and Tre'Quan Smith has also been injured this season. So they're missing their primary vertical threats. So to me, the Saints' lack of explosiveness is tied heavily to their lack of wide receiver and explosive weapons. Then you look at a team like the Bears, you know, if you thought Matt Ryan's dinking and dunking was extreme in the first couple of weeks, you know, Andy Dalton took it to a completely different level. And since they've made the change with Justin Fields, one of the biggest changes that has happened is that Justin Fields is taking more shots down the field. In terms of 20 plus yard throws, he's leading the NFL in terms of his percentage of his throws that are those vertical throws. And, you know, with Justin Fields, a very controversial figure among Falcon fans, or at least in some corners of Falcon fandom, but he's a guy that, you know, certainly when you look at the Bears situation right now, he's probably a guy that gives you a lower floor than necessarily Andy Dalton. And we saw that expressed in that Browns game that was a disaster for the Bears offense. But because of his potential to take more shots down the field, I also think he's presenting a much higher ceiling for this Bears offense moving forward, given his ability to push the ball down the field. And, you know, I talk about the Saints and Bears just to contrast them with the Falcons, because I don't think you're really dealing with the same problems. I don't think you have the same sort of convenient excuses with the Falcons and their lack of explosiveness, given that I do think that it's not really because they're suffering from not having capable receivers, at least their number one receiver in Calvin Ridley and a quality number two option in Kyle Pitts. Nor are you dealing with a level of quarterback play on par with Andy Dalton when it comes to Matt Ryan moving forward. But, you know, I do feel like the lack of weapons is an issue here in Atlanta. And, you know, it's mainly a lack of Julio Jones, again, another controversial figure in certain circles of Falcons fandom. But, you know, this was something that we discussed quite a bit on the podcast back in June after that trade. And, you know, despite all the hype that players like Kyle Pitts and Calvin Ridley and Russell Gage and even the Lamide Zaccheaus were getting at that time from certain corners of the fan base, none of those guys really looked like guys that could fill the shoes of Julio Jones when it came to the explosiveness. That was a thing that I stressed back in June as something that was going to be important for the Falcons offense. And, you know, I feel like that's been reflected in some of their offensive struggles so far this year. And they were likely going to take a significant hit by losing Julio Jones in terms of their ability to generate explosive plays. And that put a lot more pressure on someone like Arthur Smith to adjust his play calling to find ways to generate that, despite not having a clear cut go to. This is the guy that when you need a big play, you're going to go to for him. And, you know, whether you want to talk about Arthur Smith's play calling, whether you want to talk about Matt Ryan, Ryan's noodle arm, whether you want to talk about the Falcons' poor offensive line play, Calvin Ridley not being a number one wide receiver, Kyle Pitts being a rookie, you know, and I'm sure many of you jumping in the comments as I speak to sort of make your case what you think is the biggest issue to blame for the Falcons' lack of explosiveness. You know, and I'm sure even some of you are saying, like, it doesn't even matter that the Falcons aren't explosive, but I do think it does matter. And whether we see this Falcons offense open itself up this year or next year, you know, I do want to talk about some of the issues that I think the Falcons can potentially resolve, not only in terms of their long-term success, but potentially their short-term success if they can add a playmaker, again, whether it's this year or next year, that can add more verticality. And that includes potentially positioning this team to be better at running the football moving forward if they can get that type of vertical playmaker. And I'll explain that as we continue today's Lockdown Falcons. But first, again, I want to thank you guys for making Lockdown Falcons your first listen. But another recommendation for your second listen: if Lockdown Hawks isn't your bag, then check out the Lockdown Braves podcast. And whether you're watching or listening to this, you probably already now know the result of Game 3 of the NLCS. But to get insight into whatever that result is, make sure you follow the Lockdown Braves podcast or your favorite Major League Baseball team's daily podcast here on the Lockdown Podcast Network. And of course, you can find them all on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So today's episode of Lockdown Falcons is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965 with tasty and affordable food. And when I'm heading to McDonald's, it's usually on a mission to get fries and McNuggets, but McDonald's is also a place where family and friends can reconnect, a place where classmates can meet up for a study group, knowing that they'll get dependable Wi-Fi and endless supplies of fries and McFlurries. Win or Lose is a place where teammates, competitors, and both the home and away teams can come to recharge. And when you're on that long road trip and you see those golden arches, you can look forward to resting your legs and refueling. McDonald's is always there for you. It has been there for me many times, whether it provides me the fuel I need to get through a podcast or coming off a much heated debate with various Falcon fans on Twitter. McDonald is always there with that quick, reliable service and tasty, affordable food. So head over to your local McDonald's to refuel and connect. Did somebody say Locked On Falcons watch party? I'm loving it. So did you know that Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market, has 9 delicious flavors? Whether you're a fan of coconut almond like me, or you prefer mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, double chocolate, salted caramel, coconut or raspberry, there's something for everyone. And they've also been rolling out new flavors all summer and all fall long, including cherry lime, strawberry puff, Rocky Road, and Blueberry Muffin, their latest flavor. Built Bars are great because they taste just like a candy bar. They contain 100% real chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. And you get none of the guilt of eating a candy bar because Built Bars are healthy too. They're low in sugar and calories, high in protein and fiber. So go order yourself some today by heading over to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. So obviously at the top of the show, we discussed the link between good offenses and explosiveness, which I feel like is fairly self-evident of why it's important, why it matters to be explosive on offense. But as I've already said already this week on the pod, you know, I'm probably going to have to make peace with the fact that the vertical pass is probably not going to be a big element of the Falcons offense this season. You know, in light of the signing of John Brown with the Broncos, you know, I guess I just have to hold out hope that Falcons offensive coordinator Dave Ragone remembers Marvin Hall from that one summer he spent with the Bears back in 2019. But other than that, you know, I'm making peace with the idea that if the Falcons are going to get an explosive wide receiver that can help them add more explosiveness to this offense, then they're going to have to, you know, wait until the offseason. And I think, you know, having that vertical deep threat obviously is going to help you generate big plays. You know, obviously it's not the only way that you can generate big plays because the Falcons have gotten some from players like Cordero Patterson and others. You know, it's not just purely about throwing the ball deep, but obviously if, you know, you're trying to generate a 25 plus yard play, it's much easier to do that if you throw the ball 25 yards down the field than necessarily constantly throwing the ball 10 yards and hoping that your wide receiver is going to create 15 yards after the catch in order to generate those explosive plays. But I also think, you know, another factor that indicates why, you know, adding explosiveness can be beneficial is I think it has the potential to help your running game. And, you know, what I'm about to explain is probably going to be deemed, certainly is going to be deemed a little bit too much of an oversimplification. And it's not to simply suggest that, you know, if the Falcons went out and signed Marvin Hall tomorrow, that they're suddenly going to be dominating teams on the ground. But I think it does have the potential to help. And, you know, the thing about running the football is a lot of data and analytics strongly suggests that rushing success is mostly tied, and, you know, not solely tied, but predominantly tied to box counts, meaning, you know, how many defenders are in the box, whether you're getting 6, 7, or 8 guys typically, than necessarily any other factor, which includes running back skill or your offensive line skill. And that's a fairly controversial belief to have for many folks, but you kind of saw this in action yourself watching that Week 1 game against the Falcons, between the Falcons and Eagles, where the Falcons had some early success running the football. And I believe that was discussed on the first Q&A that we did, the first film review that we did following that Week 1 game. But a listener asked me sort of why the Falcons had so much success early in the game. And when I watched the film, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that the Eagles were playing a lot of cover 2 early in that game. What it does is when you have those two deep safeties, essentially they're going to be sidelined when it comes to impacting in run support. And so a defense is going to primarily rely, and when it comes to stopping the run, on the 7 defenders in the box to stop the run. And the Falcons opened up that game utilizing a lot of their heavier personnel packages, utilizing a fullback like Keith Smith, utilizing 2 tight ends, whether that was Lee Smith and Hayden Hurst and Kyle Pitts and whatnot. And I think it was effective at running against the Eagles in large part due to that, because with those personnel groupings, you're getting 7 blockers. You're getting the 5 offensive linemen. You're getting 2 additional blockers, whether that's a fullback and a tight end, or that's 2 tight ends. You're essentially getting 7 blockers on those plays. And in those situations where you have a 7-man box by the defense, if you can get a hat on a hat, right, when each guy can execute their block, find a defender and block that guy, you know, there's no really going to be nobody else to really stop the running back before he gets 5, 10 or more yards down the field. And the running back can wind up making the oncoming safety miss in the open field or whatever the case may be. Then you have the potential to get an even bigger gain, and suddenly you can start generating explosive plays off your running game, not just through the air in that regard. And, you know, if you're wondering why the Falcons, if that was the case, why did the Falcons stop having rushing success if it's all about the box count? Well, a lot of it was the Eagles defensive line after, you know, that first quarter really started to assert itself, right? You essentially, when you're going to play that 2 deep coverage with those split safeties, you need your defensive line to assert itself and essentially changed the math, right? Where it's essentially the Falcons offensive line and their blockers can't get a hat on a hat because defensive linemen and other players in that front seven are essentially winning their blocks. And that's what you kind of need for that. And that's what the Eagles were able to do. And that's why the Falcons rushing success sort of ground to a halt. And so where a deep threat plays into that is that more often than not, and again, this is an oversimplification and probably a generalization, but typically when teams are worried about the deep ball, they like to, the preferred coverage tends to be cover two, because when you have that outside stretch receiver playing those split safety coverages, those two deeps coverages, those safeties can give more help to the outside corner than you typically can find in the other sort of conventional coverages, particularly cover one and cover three that predominate outside of cover two. Right. And so that's one of the reasons why you typically see teams when they're afraid of giving up the deep ball. You see this at the end of halves when teams go in the 2 minute drill. They often play split safety coverages, because if they're not playing split safety coverages, basically the corner, whether he's in zone or man coverage in that situation, is essentially on an island, preventing that wide outside stretch receiver from generating that deep ball. And so when you play that split safety coverage with a cover two, whether it's cover two zone or cover two man, that safety can provide that deep help over the top potentially, or at least better in theory, provide that deep help. And so, you know, that's where we'll kind of get to wrapping up today's episode. But I don't want to make, I want to make it clear where I don't want anybody to sort of interpret what I'm saying today is like, oh, if the Falcons went out and signed the deep threat, all their problems will go away. It's it, to me, it's addressing one of probably a dozen problems, a dozen hurdles, a dozen issues that this Falcon team is going to have to work not only this year, but in future years to overcome in order to be one of those teams that I showed on a graphic that is potentially making a deep postseason run. And there's so many holes and issues that this team is going to have to deal with in order to be a top 10 offense, in order to be a top 10 defense. It's not to sit here and say that adding one deep threat like Marvin Hall or John Brown or whoever is going to magically fix everything. But because of the preeminence of my, you know, the belief of in terms of my preeminence of offense here on this preeminent podcast, and how that is often tied to explosiveness, this, you know, issue to me in terms of adding this vertical threat, this deep threat, that this playmaker at the wide receiver position tends to be higher on my personal list of priorities than you will often find on a lot of Falcon fans who could just kind of gloss over this stuff, as we saw over the summer where people were like, oh yeah, we'll be perfectly fine with Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts and Russell Gage. And I was like, I don't know about that, guys, because I don't know who of these guys outside of Ridley, outside of, you know, Pitts is really going to provide those explosive plays. And, you know, you're asking Pitts to essentially be as explosive as, you know, Travis Kelce or Darren Waller, you know, coming out of the gates this season. And I don't think that's a good position to be putting him. But, you know, this is an issue that the Falcons are going to be having to deal with. This is, you know, related to Matt Ryan. Right. And, you know, this is probably going to be a hot take to a lot of people. But, you know, I sit here and I say, like, I'm happy that Matt Ryan is playing better. But the fact that he's still not really throwing the ball down the field is a concern to me, and still not necessarily being that effective doing it when he does throw the ball down the field is a much bigger deal to me than it probably is to several others. And again, there's a lot to unpack there when it comes to the conversation about Matt Ryan, and we'll probably wind up talking quite a bit about that in, you know, on many episodes every single week on this podcast for not only the rest of the season, but, you know, over the next several months, if not several years. And this is not me suggesting that, you know, Matt Ryan's lack of arm strength or whatever makes him washed or whatever the case may be. And, you know, let's be clear. I'm not going to be too harsh criticizing the lack of verticality when it comes to Matt Ryan so far that we've seen this year, because who are these weapons that the Falcons need? It's not Zacchaeus. It's not really Ridley. Again, you know, if you're just going to throw go balls to Calvin Ridley, that's not how you want to use him. If you want to throw the ball down the field to Calvin Ridley, as I've suggested before, you want to run corner routes and comebacks, routes where it's not about him going up and getting the football like you would typically ask for, say, a Julio Jones or an Aljack Robinson or someone like that that has that sort of verticality and speed or whatever the case may be. But you know, given that Matt Ryan doesn't have necessarily the ideal vertical options to throw to, you know, I'm more than willing to give Matt Ryan another year, hopefully in 2022, when the Falcons can add those types of weapons to the offense to sort of see, engage where his arm strength is, where his deep ball passing is and whatnot, and see if that starts to come back and looks like the Matt Ryan of old moving forward. But to me, it is going to be a concern potentially down the road that if we continue to build up this roster, even to a point where this team is competing for the postseason, you know, I think there's going to be a question a little bit that, you know, if Matt Ryan doesn't have that vertical element to his offense, or Matt Ryan can't fulfill that vertical element of the Falcons offense, then are we just going to be in a situation similar to what we've seen with a team like the Saints the last couple of years, where it seems like they had a much lower ceiling in the playoffs, despite winning a ton of regular season games and being a 1-2 seed most of those years? And, you know, as good as the Saints' talent level was, and again, the Falcons aren't anywhere close to that, but let's imagine, you know, in a few years that they are approaching that talent level that the Saints showed these last couple of years. You know, that offense struggled to score points in January, despite as good as that offense was, you know, seemed to be. And I think a lot of that was tied to the fact that they weren't explosive. And again, this is a topic I can discuss all day and devote multiple episodes of this podcast talking about. But, you know, when I look back at, you know, team success in the postseason, I think a lot of that, more so than it is in the regular season, is tied to explosiveness. I don't think all you got to do is look back at Falcons history and look at the years where Matt Ryan and the Falcons have had postseason success. It's been because they've had playmakers like Julio Jones and Taylor Gabriel and all these guys in 2012 and 2016 generating explosive plays in the postseason that previous teams and other playoff teams were struggling to do. And so, you know, I think that's tied to the fact that the level of defense that you're typically facing in January is higher. And so, therefore, it's more important for you to be explosive because you're not going to necessarily dink and dunk your way against a top five, top 10, top 15 defense and think that you're going to do that, you know, the four or five times that you need in order to outscore that team's offense. You know, so this is something that I will continue to pay a lot of attention to. And basically the goal of today's episode is to tell you guys that you should pay attention to this, or at least keep it in mind as we move forward. You know, again, I think the Falcons are early in their rebuild. You know, they're several years away from being the sort of playoff team that we're talking about that can make that deep run. You know, it's phase one of their rebuild, you know, and when we're talking about this team being a perennial playoff team that is a potential Super Bowl contender, you know, that's probably phase three or four of this rebuild. So we're a couple of years away, but this is something that I think people need to be not necessarily concerned about, but certainly thinking about moving forward as we try to figure out, okay, what are we going to do to maximize these next couple of years of Matt Ryan in order to give Matt Ryan, you know, the chance at winning, you know, at the highest level to earn that ring that I think most of us, I can't speak for all of us in the fan base, but most of us want him to achieve here. So, you know, that's where we'll leave it, guys. And if you have, of course, any feedback, leave a comment below here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube. Of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons, on Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Of course, tomorrow is going to be our crossover Thursday, where I will be joined by Locked On Dolphins host Kyle Krabs to preview this upcoming Week 7 matchup between the Falcons and Dolphins. And before we leave it out here, guys, I want to let you know that, you know, another recommendation for your second listen, if you want to get more insight to all the comings and goings around the NFL, who's hot, who's not, all that various stuff. Of course, subscribe to the Peacock and Williamson podcast, where NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson are giving you their insights to all 32 teams and the biggest headlines and stories from around the league each and every day. And of course, you can subscribe to the Peacock and Williamson podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Appreciate it, guys. Till then.